Guys, ladies and gentlemen, podcast number 3 for the day in the Gold Coast. We've got someone that doesn't need an introduction, so I'm just going to say his name, Matt Lankshear. Thank you for coming on and joining us. Mate, everyone would know where you're at now. Obviously, by your socials, you're massive. Everyone knows who you are. But maybe not a lot of people know where you came from. Can we start back from the start of your journey in real estate, where you started, how you got going, and to where you're at now?
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for having me, guys. It's an absolute pleasure. Look, my real estate journey wasn't as flash as some others. So I finished school in 98. So it's... And one thing...
The year I was born.
What? Really? Oh, my God. That makes me feel very old. But the funny thing is I'm 42 and this is legit. I actually feel like I'm 30 years old. So
is it the ice bath?
A bit of that. A bit of just looking after yourself, gym training. I love just doing, being active all the time and, you know, and sauna ice bath every day. And it's... I feel as good... I actually feel better at 42 than when I was at 30, but I feel 30.
Really?
If that makes sense. Yeah. So it's... for me... that's one of my number one priorities, and I'll talk about the buckets that I measure my life and everything, business and everything, when we go along later into the podcast. But when I started, I finished school. Problem I had at school was I actually came from quite an intelligent family. My father's a surgeon, my brother's a surgeon, my mum was a detective with a juvenile aid, my sister's a teacher, and I was just not born with those genes, unfortunately, and I struggled my way through school.
C's and D's?
Probably worse than that. You know, Maths A, which is like the Maths A, is like they call it maths in the beer garden, and it's I failed that. I think like an E. But one thing I can do now, which is really bizarre, is I can calculate the shit out of commission. But look, I struggled my way through school, grade 11 and 12, did remedial reading, just, and it was just a bit of a struggle. And coming from a family that was quite intelligent, I sort of had a big problem with school and just couldn't get into it. I ended up getting an OP, 16 in Queensland, it's OP, so they measure it 1 to 24. 16 is not great, actually, but the difference is I actually tried my ass off and I still got a 16. So I had mates that didn't try at all and they got 15. So for me, it just wasn't my jam. I sort of had a bit of an issue with it back then because I just think school's really bizarre because they make you navigate the rest of your life at 17 years old. Like, you know, there's... careers person at school, what the hell is that? Yeah. You know what I mean? Or what do you want to do for the rest of your life? And I really struggle with that because at that point of time, school didn't tailor to emotional intelligence, which is one of my biggest strengths now, is the ability to be able to have conversations, talk to people, read people, be empathetic to people, where they didn't have that at school. It was either you get an A, B, C, D, or E, and good luck, here you go. So I finished school and didn't do very well. And my parents sort of said, look, you've got to do something with your life. I was playing tennis a bit too much after school for 6 months just no direction. They said, look, let's take you to this trade careers day. And I went into this trade day and they said, okay, here's your choices. Electrician, carpenter, or plumber. And I literally put a blindfold over my face and said, that one, and I became an electrician. So what was really bizarre, it was a blessing and a curse. I hated it from day one. I just didn't have any direction. I didn't love it. But one thing it gave me, in hindsight now, is it gave me a really good insight into development, into how houses are put together, and being able to, you know, have a greater knowledge than most in my industry of how construction works. I finished that trade, and what was interesting, when I was 17 years old, my best mate and I, we bought a house at a quite a young age. So 17, we moved out of home on apprentice wages. We renovated that house and I ended up doing a 2-year gap trip overseas, and it was fascinating. I remember I had zero money and I was sitting in Paris and I made a call to my mate and I said, look, I want to stay overseas. I'd been there for about 6 months, but I'm out of cash. I reckon we should sell the house. And so my mate said, yep, agreed. So we decided to put our house on the market. We chose an agent, a Ray White agent, actually, and Hazley Cush, who's my now business partner. I knew him very well. Who should we engage to sell the house? So we decided to put the house on the market, went to auction, and it didn't sell. And so a couple of weeks went past. I was calling the agent. What's going on? No one wants to buy it. So I was forced to come home, got in touch with the agent and said, look, I need a meeting. Agent, her name was Flo, and her slogan was go with the flow. Oh. And Flo did not produce a contract, and I wanted to go back overseas. So I asked her, do you mind if I get all the list of the people? You had 150 groups through this house. Can I call everyone? And I managed to pull 3 offers out of it, and we sold it, and I was back overseas. And I thought, geez, that was easy. Anyway, so came back, finished 2 years overseas in London, and I rang my very close mate, Hazley Cush. What are you doing? And I was thinking of starting a shoe store, like an Aquila sort of thing. I wish I did that at the time because I think that sold pretty big money. But anyway, and decided to, Hazley said, no, I think you should get into real estate. And he was desperate. He was 27 years old, started a business called Ray White New Farm. It was a broken business, ranked 200 in Queensland for the Ray White Group. So it was a busted business pretty much. And he was desperate for salespeople. So he said, yep, you'd be a great agent. Come and have a crack. So that was in 2006. And it took me 6 months. It took me 9 months to make my first sale.
Nine months.
I was really bad. Yeah. Really, really bad. And my first sale fell over. Another agent in the office took advantage of that and said, oh, look, I've got a buyer for that. How about I'll get it over the line, but you take 20, I'll take 80%. I did the deal. So because I went overseas, spent all my money, came back, spent all the money from the sale of our house, came back, moved home for the first time ever.
How old were you at this point?
At 25. And so I ended up getting myself into at that point in time, it was $40,000 credit card debt.
Fuck.
And
at that time.
Because I was too embarrassed to tell my parents. And everyone was saying, Matt, do you know what? You've always got plan B. You can always go back and be an electrician. And I was like, no, that's not my jam. I don't want to do that. I want to be successful in this. I actually like it. I just haven't quite grasped it. And I sort of didn't get it either. And then sort of the penny started to drop a little bit. But the problem with anyone that's listening to this podcast, debt is a really hard thing, right? So when you have debt, and anyone that hasn't been through that debt, it's really hard to get through the other side of it. And you always try and cut corners and try and do little deals to try to break the debt down. I remember I had one moment where I had to lie to a bank to get a credit card to pay another credit card debt at that point. So it ended up getting into $50,000 debt at one point. And that was I look back at it and I was so embarrassed to tell my parents about it because they had no idea. And I was I didn't want to go back to being, there was no plan B for me. Well, the plan B could have been being an electrician, but that was not a plan. And it sort of got to a point where I just needed to make it happen. So I remember the moment vividly. I started to do okay. And then it was when 2007, 2008, the boom came in. Obviously. I went and flew down to Sydney and I met with an agent. I rang my mum and I said, look, can I borrow $1,000? I bought a new suit because my suits were busted, bought a new pair of shoes and bought a flight to Sydney. And I met with James Dack, if you know James Dack. So he was, if you look at James Dack now, his associate at the time was Ben Collier. So Ben Collier from the agency worked for James Dack for years and met with James Dack. And I remember met him at a little cafe and went in Paddington. And I remember having this meeting with him and he said, look, I went in and saw the Wentworth Courier, which is the Eastern Suburbs publication, before I met him. And I was like looking through and there was 20 pages, James Dack, James Dack, James Dack, James Dack. And I was like, wow, this guy must be awesome. He gave me 15 minutes of his time and he said, look, I'm going to give you 3 pieces of advice. And literally had 15 minutes with him. Flew to Sydney, bought new suits, bought new shoes. 15 minutes, that's all you've got. And he said, you've got to be a massive advertiser, number one. So true to his word, 20 pages in the Wentworth Courier, absolutely phenomenal. Number two, he said, you need to be an auction agent. You need to run only auctions. And if in Queensland at that point of time, only 5 to 10% of properties went to auction. Right?
Wow.
And any of the 5 to 10% that went to auction, it was a 20 to 30% clearance rate. So no one wanted to go to auction. It wasn't an auction market. It wasn't an auction culture at all. And the third thing he said was you need to run a really systemized, structured business. So I was like, yep, okay. And then the fourth was you need to outwork your competition. And so I went back to Brisbane and literally walked into our sales meeting and told the revolutionized things that I heard from James Dack. And do I have a crack at what my number one goal was when I got back?
Clear the debt.
Well, that was a byproduct of what the number one goal was, yeah?
What was it?
Become the number one auction advertiser agent in the Courier Mail.
Wow.
So to give you a little bit of perspective on that, when I was in 2007 and 2008, a single page ad in the Courier Mail for 1 week was $13,000 per week per ad.
That's massive.
$13,000 a week
per ad. When I started, it was $17,000. To do 3 weeks of full page ads, you'd be looking at $35,000, $40,000 just in advertising for just the Courier Mail. So, and that was my number one goal, to do that. And what was really fascinating is I got my start, and there was a property on James Street in New Farm where it was on the market with another agent. The sign came down straight away within 3 or 4 days. So I rang this guy. It was like on, kept ringing. He finally took my call and he said, yep, I'll have you around. I went and he's like, had my paper in my hand, sort of all covered up, because no one wants to see when you walk in the front door and they see a paper, they know how expensive it's going to be. And I went and did a full listing presentation, said, you got to do auction, you got to do ads, you got to do all these things. And to his credit, got $45,000 advertising, got an auction, had 260 groups through the front door, sold it under the hammer for $2.85 million. And wow, that was my first segue into doing that. Mm. And then it just built and snowballed and snowballed and snowballed. And what's really interesting is the one thing that I, the most valuable, the, probably of the two, all of James Dack's things were really relevant, but the two that really stuck with me were systemized structured business and huge, and getting advertising in the Courier Mail. And so for anyone that says, oh, that listens to this, oh, well, that doesn't work because we don't have a paper or whatever. Mm. It all evolves, right? So if you don't have a paper, own REA, own domain, own whatever medium it is in your marketplace that you know you're going to get traction from. And one of the things I remember James said to me, he says, it's not who you know, it's who knows you.
Mm.
And that really rung home with me. And if you look at my business today, so we have my last auctions for the November, I had 14 auctions in November. And have a guess of how many owners you think I had a prior relationship with of all of those owners.
I'd say majority, 10.
No, 4. 10 I didn't know.
Wow.
So what that is all attraction. So it's a blend. You've got to have a blend of, you know, running your database, repeat customer referral business, and then also the attraction stuff. So ads breed ads. Ads bring more sellers through your front door. So I'm constantly meeting new people, listing their houses. They're calling me in off ads and everything. So it's a full attraction model now.
Do your agents in the office, do they have like a set budget that they want to spend per listing on social media, like $1,000 per listing? Yeah. Or?
Well, it, everyone's different. So I run a different model. Mine's 5,000 minimum spend on every campaign.
Yo. Wow. And that's just straight boosting.
Straight boosting.
Yep. Wow.
Through data.
And in terms of the way that you structure your ads, is it just everyone within a core area? Is it people that you've entered names and numbers into through the back data. End?
Yep.
Yeah. Through okay. Gotcha.
So we can now, so example, and it's cost per lead. Right. So it's like if anyone says, oh, I'm going to do a boost for $300, save you $300. It doesn't work. So we use data. So I've gone into, so obviously Meta Group owns Facebook and Instagram. So we've got our database. So if we list a property that's $5 million, I'll then go and import all of the data in the last 12 months of every property that I've sold or marketed and every open home buyer, every auction registered bidder, everything like that. Import the data from 3 million to 7 million. All that data and import it in the back of Facebook. We've got an 80% connection rate to people's social media accounts, and it's just like fishing with dynamite. So we're doing that, but you can't do that for $300. It's cost per lead.
Yeah.
So Meta Group doesn't go, oh, I'll just give you that lead for free. They're a big juggernaut. So it's all about the spend. You can't do that without half spending. No, you can't. And it's like, and if we're putting in 4,000 bits of data, what are they going to, they're not going to spit out 4,000 bits of data, but there's also the retargeting stuff as well, which we're doing. So, and lookalike audiences. So we all dial ups and, you know, so if someone clicks on it, you get their IP, then you just dial it up. And I had a customer once that, you know, she's like, she came through at the first open home, and every week after every open, we put their data into Meta. So it just keeps targeting them straight after that. And I had a lady come through. She's like, she came through the third open home. She's like, man, it's meant to be. It's just showed up on my phone again. The only reason she worked this out is she bought it at auction. We went to her house to list her house, and she's like, I don't believe in that Facebook shit. It doesn't work. And I said, oh, do you remember when you said it's meant to be? That was what that was.
Wow, that's huge.
So it's pretty cool. Our market's all expats and as well and interstaters. So people go, oh, how do we market to expats and interstates? Through data. If I went, so for example, if I said I want to find a buyer in Sydney to look in Brisbane, and I just went and dropped a pin over Double Bay, statistically not going to find anyone. Like the people in Double Bay aren't necessarily going, oh, I'm going to go buy in Brisbane. So it's a waste of money. So we do it through data. And then what we do is, so give you an example of expats. A lot of my clientele are Hong Kong expats coming back. Wow. They used to have to go to Sydney and Melbourne, but they come to Brisbane now. They go, we can work from anywhere with COVID. Brisbane's a little bit different to what it used to be. So the people are coming back. They hadn't been home for a long time. They're coming, they're seeing the Carlisle, they're seeing great schools, easy place to live. And they're coming in droves. So we're seeing 1,500 people a week coming into southeast Queensland.
1,500?
Wow. A week.
Fuck.
And we've got a housing crisis as well at the moment. So development stopping, well, has put the brakes on because construction's so expensive. There's not as many apartments coming out of the ground. There's not as many developments happening. So where are they actually going to go? So we found stock levels just this year alone are down 30%, buyer inquiries up 30%. So it's been this perfect storm. Even wow. with all the interest rate rises, not even one part of an impact on the inner city of Brisbane.
Wow.
So what we've been able to do with those expats, so for example, an expat buys one of our properties, we put all of his data, it comes through, data comes in, we put into Facebook. We can then go lookalike audiences through Facebook.
Fuck.
And so if you're a Hong Kong expat sitting in Hong Kong and you want to, and generally your circles that you're hanging out with over there, are there expats doing the same thing when they come back? So we then target all their friend circles.
Fuck, I've and got so, to do that.
So I've sold two. I've sold two properties, one for 1,150,000 to an expat from Hong Kong, sold one around the corner for just over $6 million to their friend, unbeknown to each other, were buying in Queensland.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
So how would you find the data of buyers that are expats though?
What do you mean? Oh, well, because they've inquired.
Okay.
So it's anyone that's actually inquired. Yeah. You've got to have the data.
Mm, yeah.
So that's the key, right?
I need to get this data.
Well, it's just by, you got all these more properties, you meet more people.
Yeah. I'm thinking, because I'm a buyer's agent and I'm thinking about bringing my business up here.
Yep.
I'm like, how would I get the traction? And that's a fucking really good idea.
It's huge. It's a massive part. And this is an evolving thing. Like this wasn't happening 5 years ago. This wasn't even happening like that 3 years ago. And it's like, I remember when I made a shift from onto social media, I remember my business partner Hazley, he'd be like, don't waste your time with that shit, you're just spending so much time on social media. And I'm so glad that I did it like 5 years ago. Like I just started to just keep going with it, and then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Is it possible now to start and do it again? Absolutely it is, but it's just the algorithms are getting harder. Oh man, it's hard.
Yeah,
like I don't understand it. It's and people are doing too much personal stuff on there. Like your digital footprint, like how do you look on social media? So this is what we do with all of our stuff, is like have a look at yourself online and work out if you're a potential future client, would you list with you? You know, I don't think clients like to see people doing like shooters at 12 o'clock at night, you know, on a Friday night when they're meant to be, it opens on a Saturday.
Yeah, no, definitely,
you know
what not.
I mean? So, but most people don't have those boundaries.
Yeah. You must not have a lot of boundaries in terms of work though, because you're here recording a podcast with us while this is your second week of holidays. What's your why? You must have a really big why for you to be dragging yourself into Dane Atherton's office to record this on a holiday.
Oh no, I like doing these things. I like and I think I spoke to you on the phone about you know, just I like giving, paying forward into the industry. I know our industry's, look, it's unfortunately there's, you know, it does have a few horror stories, but like anything, and it's a really interesting segue, and this is probably going to be a bit vulnerable, but I nearly got out of real estate about a year ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Just because it was a moment, but it was a build-up of about 5 years where when you're an agent, you're outward facing, right? You're always on the front line with the general public. Real estate has such a bad name, unfortunately, and I was sort of trying to defend myself, defend the industry, one person, one transaction at a time. And I just remember I just got to breaking point, and I was standing, and I'm sure a lot of agents can resonate with this. It's when you're sitting at the front of an open home and you get rude people come to you all the time, and they judge you before they know you. They, you know, you, because you're out in the public all of the time, you know, you always have people say, oh, he's a dickhead or he's a wanker or whatever, just because they're a real estate agent and they don't actually know you. And I remember I had this one moment, I was at an open home and I had these two people come through, and my father's a surgeon, right? So I remember I rang my dad and I said, hey, is this your, I've heard you talk about him. He's like, yeah. And anyway, when they walked in, I was like, g'day, I'm Matt, how are you going? And this is after COVID, like I'm talking like this is within the last 12 months. I always ask, do you shake hands still? Like just to be courteous. That's, I always do that. And I went to shake, oh, do you shake hands? She's like, no, we don't shake hands. And I was like, oh, okay, that's no worries. And she goes, and by the way, don't call me after this open too. We're not interested. Like, this is before she'd even walked through the place. And I'm like, a bit rude, you know, and I've been doing this 17 years. Like, and it's not like I'm, you know, starting out and haven't done a good thing, like, and quite successful at what I do. And it was just one of these things that just, it was starting to get to the, like, the boiling pot for me. And 2 seconds later, that person walked up to another person in the open home. Oh, hug and shaked hands and all of that. And I was like, this is crap anyway. So on the way out, when they were leaving, I said, what'd you think? She said, I said, don't call me after this. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Well, just before you go, are you a doctor? And they're like, why would you ask me that? And I said, oh, you might know my father, Ray Lancashire. And their jaw dropped and literally went to shake my hand. I said, no, I don't shake hands. Anyway, after what happened was, it was a really bizarre moment in my whole career, because it's like, I'm not a bad person, right? I try to do right by everyone. And then it was just this one thing where I think I was fed up, and it pushed me to a point where I was like, it pushed my brain into a place I didn't want to go. And it was like me trying to justify that I'm better than you, or I probably do better than you financially. And I like literally, my brain went, what the fuck am I actually doing here? So I went and saw a psychologist for the first time, mate. It's crazy.
Wow.
Crazy.
Wow. And what was that experience like?
The psychology? Life-changing, to be honest. So I went and saw her just because I was out. I remember ringing my business partner, Hazley, and said, mate, buy my shares out. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done.
Wow.
And it was interesting. I went and met her, and she was really, really good. Like, and she's like, so asking about my family, asking about my childhood, asking about all these things, and have I always been a fighter, like to try to prove that I'm better than something, but I've never thought this way, right? And she said, but you think it's about real estate. It's not about real estate, it's about you. Because let's look at it. Are there shonky real estate agents? Of course there are. Are there shonky priests? Yeah, they are. Are there shonky doctors? Yes, there are. Are there shonky, you know, lawyers? Absolutely there are. So it's not about industry, it's about your perception. And so what she did is she unbelievably trained my brain to actually go, why would you actually care with everything you've got on going on in your life? Family, friends, great business, you know, happy, healthy. Why would you actually care about what people think of you when they don't know you and they haven't even given you the opportunity? So what she's done is she's retrained and programmed my mind to actually come from a place of fuck you to, are you okay? You must have something going on in your life that you actually are trying to cut the legs off someone that you don't know, and you actually have a perception of them that they're someone that you don't actually have a clue about.
Yeah.
And the moment I changed my brain around that, I'm free. I feel free in my life, in my head, in my everything. And I feel like I can give so much more, and I'm loving real estate even more. And so I'll get someone that comes to my open, I'm rude, and I'll just kill them with kindness and sit there and go, do you know what? Far out. If they're coming to my place of work and being like that, imagine the shit that they must have going on in their life at home.
Yeah.
And when you change that perception around, and look, it took a bit of training, a bit of time, but now that I've got it, you can't shock me. You can't break me. And I don't actually care. And why would you care about what someone thinks about you that doesn't know you or give you the opportunity to know you? Does that make sense?
Hey, that's powerful stuff.
It's bloody awesome. And that's why I said to you before about social media.
Yeah.
Like I now sit there, like I went up to Hamilton Island for a mate's 40th.
Good
and
time.
It was awesome. And mate, on a huge yacht, all these things. And I did not even feel like I wanted to post, because I was around the people I wanted to be with. And who was my target market? What, piss clients off, maybe? Piss.
Yeah.
Or maybe inspire young people to work harder. But who cares? Like, it's like I was with my wife, I was with my mates, I was with all the people I cared about. Why do I need to flaunt that to anyone? I don't actually care. And it's actually been so powerful. So it's all gone, well, if I'm with you, I'm with you. If I'm not, like, that's, you know. And it's actually really, really, it's been a breakthrough, considering being 17 years in the industry. People used to say, when are you tapping out? And I'm like, geez, now I reckon I've got another 17 in me. easily and loving it. Loving it.
Wow, that's it, man. Especially if you're feeling 30 again.
Mate, I feel good.
Let's go. Rock feel and good. Roll. Man, do you reckon we can touch on, at the start of the podcast, you mentioned something about these buckets?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that a good segue to
totally. Well, probably there's probably one segue before that, I reckon.
Yeah, man, go.
So there's different seasons of for say you're a young real estate agent listening to this or someone that's sort of wanting to get to the next level, there's a few little stages in there which I went through, right, to break through to that next level. So if you look at it, there's the learning stage, which is your first sort of couple of years, like probably 2 to 3 years where you're learning everything. Like you're going into an industry, most people don't have real estate experience. So they're going in learning a whole new trade. And effectively it's an apprenticeship to get into real estate, to be a real estate agent. Then it gets to the building stage, right? Which is really cool because it's like you get that little bit of success and then you get to a level where, you know, let's just say you're a $500,000-$700,000 rider and you're going, okay, well, I'm going pretty well here, really happy. And you're just trying to break through, right? It's really interesting. I don't know about you guys, but when I got to that stage there, a question that went into my brain was not around how am I going to get to the next level, but it was like, am I worthy of it? Am I actually worthy of getting to the next level? Which was like, you know, most people will get there and they'll go, because what you see is a lot of people get to that stage and then there's a huge drop off backwards, right? Yeah. So if you look at the market that's just gone now through COVID, so Ray White Group as a group had a record number of elite performers, which is sort of 600 plus riders, right? In GCI. They had, I think it went up by 30%. And then the drop off when the market sort of corrected, dropped off down back to under 30%. I think it was even more than 30%. And what's really interesting is, what do you do to get to that next level again, right? And it's the one, first part is accepting the fact that you're worthy of doing it and that you just haven't flat fluked it. Do you know what I mean? So you get to that and you go, far out, I like this success, but do I actually, can I keep going? Can I do it? Do I have the capacity to do it? Do I want it? Do I want it? Right? And how do I break through to the next level? And that's why in most groups that you see, like real estate groups, they go elite performer, chairman elite performer, right? Because it's this different tiers, right? But then what do I need to do that breakthrough? And this is the one thing that no one actually ever talks about. And like, because I've been trying to work it out forever. And it's, there's a thing called sacrifice, right?
Sacrifice.
So, and that's the only way you can break through. Because I've got mates in my life, right, that are were the smartest at school, the best at school, all of those sorts of things. And they've picked a field, like whether you look at, say, you had an OP1 or whatever, you guys, what's your measure in Sydney?
For
OPs at school?
What's
OP? HSC.
Oh, HSC, yeah. So is it like 100%?
Yeah, ATAR at 100%.
Yeah, so most people back in the day, you get 100%. They either used to go into physio or doctor or engineer or something like that because they were forced that way. I've got mates of mine now who are some of the smartest, best operators ever, and they're struggling to make ends meet now because it's like they chose a field which is like that they're sort of capped, right?
Yeah.
And the hardest thing for them now, I've had mates who are so smart that have gone, geez, maybe I should have a crack at real estate. But do you know what? I've left it too late. I've got a mortgage. I've got kids. I've got this. I've got that. And unfortunately, the one thing that they're going to miss out on is they can't sacrifice it because there's too much risk there. But if they took the actual risk, it would be massive, right? So a lot of these younger people anyone that goes really well, the sacrifice is the number one thing that it will either make or break their career, right? So for example, when I decided to make, I became obsessed about real estate, right? So I was on this journey of like, it was just my business just kept 2xing. And it was like, I had no children. I literally burned through girlfriends at that point of time, like 30 underwear. It was like, because
of the blue eyes. Or
what? Oh yeah, so right. It was because they would be waiting around at home. When are you coming home? I don't know. And that was my journey, was like, it's either you come on the journey you don't come on the journey. And a lot of people can't do that. And I could see it so clearly, right? I remember my own 30th birthday party. I was 2 hours late to my own 30th birthday party.
Wow.
My mates were filthy. Like, absolutely filthy. And I remember I hired a house down in Byron for all of our mates just to have a big, it was our missed 40th. We had our 40th, it all got cancelled with COVID. And so I hired Mark Bruce's house, actually, down in Byron, yeah.
That's cool.
And had all of our mates there and everything. And we were sitting around that night and a few of the boys just said, you know what, I get it now. I get why you, well, I get why you did this. I get why you missed these things. And I get all of that. And that's the sacrifice part, right? And if you see any person that's on this journey, like you look at some of the best in the industry, you look at, let's say, Alexander Phillips, you look at Gavin, you look at all Josh Teslin, all those guns, right? Sacrifice, mate. Like they work their asses off to get through that breakthrough stage. And once that's interesting for anyone that wants to know how to do it and what you do is you make that sacrifice. And then once you break through, it becomes easy.
Mm.
It becomes easier. Like it just, you can see clearly, business comes to you, but you've got to get through that stage because what happens is otherwise you just drop back off and you're like, oh, it's the market's fucked, it's this, it's that. It's like, no, you just haven't sacrificed. That's it.
Would you call that barrier like mil and a half? That the barrier at the moment?
Depends on whatever it is. Like it's look
for momentum.
Well, when you momentum, it's when you get a team, when you get so I reckon once you break a mil, that's where you see people that just hover at a mil. It's when you want to get like right into it, like the fours, five, sixes, right? That's when it's like, and this is like, so my business is there now. I'm at the 5 mil mark. And it's like, and I'll be honest, it's, I do it, I won't say like easily, but I do it, I've got a great team around me and a really good structure base around me. And what's really interesting is if you look at, I don't know if you guys have read Atomic Habits by James Clear, my whole business is based on that book. So everything, all marginal gain. So I say to my team, I want to be the best in world, best in industry at the activities that I do. That's it. So everything we do, we want to be 1% better or every single day on everything. And it's like what most people do is they'll go, oh, I'm going to write $5 million this year. And then they go, how are you going to do it? And they go, no, I'm just going to do it. And it's like, yeah, cool. So it's like running a marathon. I want to do a marathon in 3 hours.
Mm.
And then they don't eat well. They don't sleep well. They don't do their training. They don't do their fartlek training. They don't do their hill sprints. They don't do their short runs, long runs, all of that. And they could probably finish it, but they're not going to do it in 3 hours. Do you know what I mean? So my team, we sit there and I say, okay, we've literally every quarter, we redefine all of our roles to go over the plan again. I only do 8 things in my business, that's it. And just specialize and want to be best in industry in those 8 things that I do. And it's and what's happened is over time, it's become a bit easier. I'm still following every single, because I've got agents in my industry, in my area, in my office that start at the same time as me. And they're writing $7 million, I'm writing $5 million. Same market. Why? Probably a little bit of sacrifice, probably a little bit of...
Have you ever seen someone crack through the million barrier and get into the 2+ by having more of a work-life balance without sacrificing?
I'm the wrong person to ask about work-life balance because I think work-life balance doesn't exist in your first 10 years of real estate. And that comes to sacrifice.
Was the sacrifice worth it?
Me, yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, yeah, mate. Like, it's my life is like, I love everything that I've got in my life. I've got 4 beautiful children. We're about to do an incredible build on our house in Brisbane. We've got a place at the coast. We're like, life's pretty chill as well. It's, I've changed my life and it's probably a segue back into your buckets thing. So I measure my whole life on 3 buckets. One is family, friends and relationships. That's one bucket. The second bucket is wealth creation, investments and real estate. And the third is health, well-being and fitness. And so what I used to be really good at was doing 2 of the 3 really well and 1 would suffer.
Mm.
So for example, business would be humming, family would be humming, but I'd be a bit pudgy, a bit like tubby, not feeling good, really? Right? Yeah. Or my family would be great, I'd be fit as fuck, and then and then the business would suffer. And so I've actually worked it out.
This is me in a nutshell.
So I've actually worked it out because I used to run trying to 110% in each bucket at all time, right? Always. As soon as you do that, everything will fail. And I'm sort of working this out the older I'm getting, because I know, like, even though I feel good, my training's different. Like, I'm not going to go and do a 200 kilo squat anymore. No chance. Like, I don't need to do heavy weights. I don't need to do those things. I just want to feel good. You know, I want everything to be, like, I want to be lean and all those things, but I don't want to be a big beefcake and all that because it's not good for your body. Like, you're injury prone now. Like, I'm 42 years old. Like, I just had a bulging disc in my back just from, like, just, I've been out for 18 weeks purely based on trying to run a marathon and did it in the gym. And it's like, made me feel, I went to a pretty dark place because I was doing 35Ks runs on a Sunday to now that. So now I've got to just modify everything I do around my back. So,
say 5K runs or 30?
35K
runs.
Yeah.
Runs.
Yeah. Oh my God. So it was, and doing it, like, I don't listen to headphones.
Oh, that's the next level.
And my favorite bit's from 25 to 35.
Right, that's where it, that's where the pain comes.
That's what I love. That's when you get your heart rate right. You know, sitting at 149, 150 beats per minute, sitting at that pace, sitting
what's
at
around. What's your average pace per kilometre?
5:45, just for the long runs, yeah.
How do you structure your day? Because you'd mentioned hot and cold therapy. You're obviously mentioning exercise. How do you structure everything into your day?
Yeah,
and so we don't get sidetracked. Tell me how you.
Okay, yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, so I've dropped every single bucket down to 85%.
Ah, that's the key.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's like, because if you do 110 in every bucket, you're gonna burn, right? So for me personally, I've dropped my weights down, and there's one thing that I've learned in the last 12 months, which has been an absolute game changer for me. Sleep. Eight hours sleep every night.
With an alarm clock or without an alarm clock to wake up?
I set an alarm, but I usually wake up before my alarm.
What happens when you can't switch off your brain?
You can.
I can't.
Yes, you can.
I think I can't.
You gotta just try harder. So, do you know what? The only thing that I'll feel anxious about is if I feel like I haven't given it every opportunity the day before and I'm thinking about it the next day. So I try to tick every box before the day's out, right? Wow. So if I have an issue at work with a client, a vendor or something like that, make the call. It's harder not to make the call than it is to make the call. Do you know what I mean? So just get it done. Anything that's going to make you feel anxious to go to sleep about, make sure you clear it off the day before or do it that day and write a list of all the things you need to do. Like, and so they're the only times I feel anxious or guilty about something if I feel like I haven't given 100% to resolve whatever it is on that day. So, and I do have a pretty good like tolerance level now of like being able to, if I've done everything right, and I've done everything right, I'm fine. Totally fine.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's like, stress is a killer, mate. Stress is a big killer. And it's like, if you're feeling stressed, you know, you got to probably, you know, exercise a little bit more, go and talk to someone about it. Like, mate, my whole life, I used to stress about what people thought about me. Literally. I used to think about a social media post before I posted it because I thought about what people would think. I could not give two fucks anymore. Like, literally. And if someone actually feels like that, they're going to troll you or whatever, man, that's sad. So sad. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's, it literally, for me now, I can literally go to sleep, no worries. And I train every day. So the 8 hours sleep.
8 hours sleep.
Every day for me has been an absolute game changer. Try not to drink between Monday and Fridays.
Is there caffeine in the week?
Absolutely. I've got one into two long blacks every day. That's it. But nothing crazy. In the morning early. Never after 12.
Where do you fit in the ice bath and sauna?
So this is the other thing, right? So everyone likes to go, and this is just seasons of life, right? So I've got 4 kids now. So when we had our 4th child, I wanted to, obviously when my wife was pregnant, she needed help at home with the kids in the morning. So what I have been able to do by obviously been doing, I'm not saying that everyone can do this, but this is just my season of life, which has made it really good for me, is I ended up moving my training sessions to lunchtime. So go to bed at 9:30, I can sleep until 6, get up with the kids, make their breakfast, do their lunches, drive them to school 8:30 every morning. Right, like, and through kid drop off every day. That was my time to be able to hang with my kids, spend quality time, you know, uninterrupted time with the kids as well, which is really important. I've got an 8-year-old, 6-year-old, 4-year-old, and a 7-month-old now. So spending authentic, genuine, valuable time with them is really important to me. and doing the school drop-offs, which is really cool. So that's allowed me now to go to bed at 9:30, 9 o'clock, wake up at 6, there's 8 hours, easy. And, and do you know what? Stop scrolling Instagram before you go to bed.
Yeah. Fuck, it's you so bad.
You get into that little, you go down that rabbit hole, mate.
So bad. I look up, it's midnight. What is going on?
Yep, totally. Or even, it's like what James Clear says, mate, you got to break those cycles. So if you come home and all lounge chairs face in the direction of a TV, right? So most people go there, they get into a habit. They'll get home, oh, it's been a shit day, I'm so stressed. Go and get a red wine, go and sit in front of those shows, then binge and watch shows till 1 o'clock in the morning, and they go, fuck, I've got to get up tomorrow morning, and then go training, and then you don't train, then you feel guilty, and then all those sort of things. You miss your sleep, you're doing 6 hours sleep. I used to think I could run on 5 hours sleep.
Fuck.
Always used to do that for 10 years of my life. Mm. And it was always, you know, I'd go up and down all the time with my health. And then it got to a point where I was like, nah. So I see a trainer 3 days a week. It was it's amazing what you can do in those days. But the other days I'd sit there and I'd do my own training as well. So I try to train 5 days a week, do yoga on a Saturday. I've now got into Pilates, which is amazing. Everyone that says, oh, Pilates is not hard enough. You haven't tried Pilates. Pilates is
hard. It's really hard.
It's really good.
Gavin Rubenstein does Pilates.
It's too hard.
It's amazing. It's changed my life. Like I do 2 private sessions a week now, which is amazing.
Wow.
It's like, and that's probably why I feel so good. But yeah, so I train I make the time to train. So I'll either do a sauna or an ice bath after the training session. So I'll always tag it on. But what happens is I drop the kids at school from 8:15, so I'll be in the office by 8:30. Then I'll be super productive all the way through till 12. Then I'll have my PT session, go get lunch after that, back in the office by 2, super productive till however Monday, Tuesday nights is generally till 8 o'clock usually. Then I'll try Wednesday, Thursday, I'll try to get home, feed the kids, then just work from home after that. And then Fridays, I'm at home 4:30 every Friday.
4:30?
Yeah, and then Saturday I work. But this is the problem, right? Like, most people go, oh, work-life balance, real estate's hard. I might take a day off during the week because I work Saturdays as well.
Mm.
Absolute bullshit. You cannot. If you can afford to take a day off during the week because you work a Saturday, you don't have enough on. Mm. So I can't afford. So I've done 17 years of 6 days a week. And what's funny is if I do have a Saturday off when I'm not on holidays, I'll be like, scrolling or ringing people, what's going on with the deals. I'll be at a wedding, I'll be like, text me, what's going on, all that sort of thing. And that's because I love it as well, yeah. You know. Mm. But when I'm off, I'm off. When I'm on, I'm on. And there's a big distinct definition in that. So like literally, so I'm off now and it's like I'm down the coast, I'm with my family, it's amazing. Like literally turned all my phone's diverted. I've got turned off all of my emails, turned off all of my WhatsApp notifications.
Wow. That's
awesome. Yeah. And it's like, it's actually being able to have very good quality time with yourself and with your family. Down here, I've set up I've got a wellness center in our garage. I've set up sauna ice bath in there, a little gym.
Oh, cool.
So we can do it every day.
That's
so
it. Let's go.
But it's weird now because it's in my life. I'll look up hotels anywhere around the world when I go for a trip. And one of the big deciders of whether I go to that hotel is, one, if it's got a sauna or an ice bath in it, or if it's got a sauna and ice bath facility around it somewhere.
Wow. That's killer. How long have you been with that, doing that routine?
5 years.
5 years with ice bath sauna?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's game changing.
Yeah.
Absolutely game changing. So before any auctions, so my business partner Hazley knows that if we have auctions on, he knows my routine. If it's on a Saturday morning at the Carlisle, I've got yoga at 6 till 7, then sauna, ice bath. If it's a nighttime one, I'll finish at 4. If it starts at 6, I'll finish at 4, go sauna, ice bath till 4 till 5, then into the auctions. And it just changes how you feel, how your brain feels, it just makes me a better functioning person.
It's like a runner's high, isn't it? Like,
I love it, mate. It's like, increase your dopamine levels, gives me clarity, makes me feel good. It's amazing. So it's
why wouldn't you?
Is the routine you run now, can that routine be implemented for someone that's in the breakthrough period where they need to be sacrificing?
That's a good question. when you're in the breakthrough phase, yes, you can. But what happens is, I don't know, I went the other way. I'd be sitting in the office and I got quite pudgy because I was like literally working in the office. It was like this really nice Indian job across the road. roll over there at 7 o'clock at night. If I knew myself the way I know myself now, I wouldn't have done what I did then. I would have been the healthy, fit way. Yeah. I'd be up and down, but I also didn't have my buckets in check either. So I'd be like, yeah. I'd either be, you know, girlfriend going really well and trying to do a little bit of time there, and then the business would be suffer, but then my health would be good, and then I could never get it all balanced out right. But I think the key is for anyone that does it, you can't do everything at 100%.
Yeah.
You can't do it. You'll burn out at some point. So you can dial it down a little bit, and it's and let's be honest, most people that sit there and say I work long hours, it's all bullshit. It's about productive hours as well.
Mm.
So look, we get paid to work when other people aren't working, and it's and what I find one of the biggest problems we have now with younger people or anyone in real estate is DocuSign has been the worst problem we've ever seen. Is because they'll send a contract to someone that lives two streets away. Mm-hmm. Without actually going to see them face to face. So it's so you know what I mean? But it's but now if I was to do it again, and to answer your question, I'd be doing knowing what I know now, I'd be doing what I'm doing now then for sure. Yeah. And I would have had much more success rate and quicker. 100%.
Yeah. Did you set the Brisbane record? Yeah. A while back? Is this still the record?
Yeah. So I've got the Brisbane record three times. So I broke it originally in 2015 with a property called Ballam, 33B Harbour Road, which sold for 11.8. Then I backed it up in 2017 with a house, 1 Leopard Street, which sold for 18.48 million. And I've just broken it again this year of 101 Wellesby Street, which settled 2 months ago for
20.5
for a house. So
Brisbane's picking up.
What's it like breaking a city record?
Because
this doesn't happen often.
The first time it was really exhilarating because it was like I didn't think that I was the person. I got given an opportunity where I hustled my way into it and broke it. So that was like the greatest thing I'd ever. That was like a lifetime achievement for me. And it's and then the second one was I felt relieved, relieved. And then the third one, I was like, I was back to being re-energized again because it was it's because I sort of wasn't the one hit wonder or the you know, I didn't fluke the second one. It was just I'm the only person that has broken it three times in Brisbane, still hold it right now as we speak. So it's and so no one can take that away from you. You know, like you get your competitors that'll be like, oh yeah, do you know what? Oh, Matty, you got lucky on that. It's like, oh yeah, three times lucky, eh? Where's your prison record?
That's crazy.
In terms of leverage, how did you leverage the sale? Did you just go hard on social media or?
Totally. Well, it changes. So it was interesting. So the first time I broke it for their 11.8 million, I went and looked up every single house I thought would be worth over $5 million. I invited them through the open. We were allowed to do open homes on that house. We had 447 groups through, met a shitload of owners that came through there, rang them all with the result after, did massive direct marketing, dropped them all to all the people I wanted to target. That's how I met the owners of 1 Leopard Street, gave them the confidence to go to market and sold that for 18.48 million. Did that again with every other owner again, and then just snowballed. And then after that, it's like you built your database. I run a database of about 1,700 people on the database. My average sale price around $4.5 million now.
Wow.
But you know, there's been a heap of sales this year. They're $20 million, a couple of $10 million, a couple of 11s, all that sort of thing. So
yeah, it's been a couple of the grayer sales. A
couple of what we sold, the Sculpt and Scorpio, one for 10, one for 9 million, four. 9.25 million this one, which was good this year. So we've got another one hopefully coming up with Grayer shortly.
How does someone get in the door with a big time developer like the Grayers? Like, how would you position yourself to actually, because they're selling with you and they're selling with a couple other top dogs.
Yeah.
How would you go, hey guys, I should actually be the one selling these houses?
It's a good, I can tell you what happened with Grayer. It's I'm based in New Farm. Paddington's another area, just off like probably 4K on the other side of the city. And obviously Grail were building, their house builders at that point of time, they were just going up and up and up and up. They had a great relationship with a great agent, still have a great relationship with that agent. But it was just probably a timing thing where we had, New Farm was a super tight market, not a lot of stock available. High price, so in New Farm you get, compared to Paddington, you get, so if I take a buyer to Paddington from New Farm, they get 20% bigger house, 20% bigger land, 20% less price.
Wow.
So it was a really good way to be able to take buyers through to benefit them, right? And we had a lot of buyers that would say, hey, we, New Farm's priced us out, we can't afford New Farm. So I remember reaching out to Rob on Insta and said, hey, there's a good direct correlation here. I know you've got a relationship. I'm not here to sabotage that relationship at all, but I want to show you what I could do with the buyers that are coming from New Farm. Would you just give me one?
Wow.
Did it. Bang, nailed it. Got 20% over. And then Rob's now, he's a very, very, very great loyal client, which we've been working.
Great listener too. Rob, if you're listening to this, come on the potty.
Yeah, I can get you Rob on the potty. No worries. He's great, mate. They're just so good at what they do. They're great marketers. They're great. They build a great product. We just sold Scorpio for Rob and
Insane
Andy,
house.
Which was great. We sold that for $10 million. Interestingly enough, the buyer came off the Courier Mail. Passive buyer, not in the marketplace. Rob was always like, no, we're not going to do that. Let's just do it by a call. Bang, sold it for $10 million to that buyer that was not in the market for a property. And that was the whole reason why I do print, for that whole reason, the passive aspirational buyer. And you know, worked really, really well, and our relationship has just flourished over the years. And I think I've sold probably 15, maybe 20 houses for Grey now.
That's amazing,
which is pretty cool. So it's a good relationship, but it's like, you know what, you do a good job, repeat referral business is huge. You know, I've got a really good repeat referral business where I don't get caught, they don't call anyone else in, they just, you know, they know what I do for them, they know how I negotiate, they know how we represent their properties, and that's been a time thing. And we just do it over and over and over and over again, and makes a great relationship.
In Sydney, in the area of the whole Northwest District, which encompasses, you know, tens and tens of thousands of houses, there's one, maybe two agents that have been there for 10 plus years that are actually still doing well. You've been able to do this and have the longevity over a long period of time. How come you've been able? How have you been able to do that?
Yeah, well, I don't deviate from the plan. Like, I rock up, and it's a process driven industry, right? Ooh,
process, you know,
it's,
focus.
It's totally process. Everything is about having the best possible processes I can have. Like I said, we're always looking to improve on our processes. So I've got 8 key focuses I focus on, that's it. And it's like, we want to be best in the industry, best in the world. And what I say to my team every single time is, I'll say, okay, and this is a James Clear thing. I go, if we have perfect processes, my number one goal is to have 10 out of 10, like literally the perfect processes. And if we write $1 million rather than writing $5 million and we run the perfect processes, I'm happy, that's a win.
Wow.
But guess what? If you run the perfect processes, 10 out of 10, you ain't gonna write 5. You're gonna write probably $7 million, right? So you literally follow those processes.
Do you mind sharing what they are?
Yeah, there's a number of them. So Magic 50 is my number one, which is like, so we do saturation around houses. So our current listings that we've got, we do, it's like layering around, I don't know.
12, 12, 25.
12, 12, 25, whatever it is. Everyone's got a different name for it. So you market to all the houses that live, or the people that live around that. So any campaign that we run, if we list a campaign, we will list 2 to 3 properties off the back of that campaign of locals, of neighbours.
Without selling it, just listing it?
Well, no, well, in the process, yeah. So wow. if we don't do our Magic 50s correctly, we'll get no listings off the back of it. Sometimes we get too many listings on that street that we end up stopping the Magic 50s and do it in another spot because we end up getting too much stock in a street.
Crazy.
Literally. And it's so that's a big one. Print, obviously, is a huge one. So my KPIs are anywhere between 5 to 10 pages a week in the Courier Mail. And that's what we do every single week, week in, week out. Social media is a big one. $5,000 to $10,000 spend per property, obviously using our data for that. Auctions is another big one as well.
All properties auctions?
Yeah, look, I would say 80% of my business is auction focused. Absolutely. Yep. That's a huge part of it. All personal marketing is another big one. We do a huge amount of personal marketing. So every end of month, end of quarter, we do a lot of that, which goes out to 5,000 homes every single time without fail. Database communication is huge. So I've got, say, 1,700 people in my database. We'll run anywhere between 25 and 50 in my pipeline, which is people that are looking to come onto the market in the next sort of 2 to 3 months. I'll have and I'll manage that myself. My team manages the rest. So if I have someone in my pipeline mm-hmm. that says, oh, we're not going to sell for 6 months, I pop them back into the database. My team communicates with them every maximum 3 months. But with our Magic 50s and most of it's in our core area, they'll get spoken to every week generally.
Wow.
So it's a lot of outbound stuff as well.
Yeah.
What else is there? There's that. And then auctions. Geez, I'll send you what it is. I'm sort of holiday mode, vacay mode. So I'm trying not to think about them, to be honest. But yeah, it's what's worked really well for us. So that 8 key focus is what we hammer. And what's interesting is, you know, a year ago when I was feeling shit about myself and the business before I saw this lady, it was like, mate, I could have got beaten by anyone on a listing. I was just negative. And it's like, so the one thing I will not lose a listing from lack of enthusiasm. Literally, like I will go into any listing presentation. I will run rings around anyone based on energy, based on passion, based on market knowledge, based on my product knowledge of anything real estate, and I will not lose a listing against it. And I come from a different place as well. So most people go, okay, well, it's hard to beat an established agent because they've got the runs on the board, all those sorts of things. It's really easy to beat an established agent if they lose enthusiasm around what they're doing. I will not lose enthusiasm. So sometimes I do feel sorry for some of the competition because they will not beat me on that. But one thing I love about real estate is there's not one perfect client for an agent, right? So I could go in and they might not like me. So, and I'm comfortable with that. But the reason I'm comfortable with that is if I miss that listing, I've still got 10 of the other ones, which I'm getting anyway. And it's like, so we're at a position now where this is what I love about it. Is my team and I, we've decided that we only want to deal with people that we want to deal with and that want to deal with us.
Wow.
So we'll sit in our meeting and say, okay, well, is this person going to be a good fit for us? Were they nice and courteous on the phone, or were they difficult on the phone? Are they, you know, are they going to be problematic over time? Are they going to listen to our recommendations? If they're not going to listen to our recommendations, generally it all goes to shit anyway. So we may as well not go on the market for 3 months and waste time. So we like to choose and do things we enjoy now, which is, and I don't suggest anyone that's been in real estate starting out do that. Like, you need to take on whatever you can and suck shit for as long as you can until you can make those decisions. And that has been one of the coolest things that's made me want to stay in real estate. So again, like, I want to be in real estate. I could be in real estate for the next 10 years easily, the way I feel now.
Wow. What do you do on the bad days, the hard days?
Follow the process.
Yeah. You just stick it through.
Stick through the process. And what happens is, okay, so this is it. So rut, you know the word rut? I'm in a rut. Oh, I'm in a shit spot. I'm in a rut. And it's like, it's like most people that are in a rut, they're in a rut because they've lost control of what they know they should be doing.
Yeah.
The only way to get out of a rut is to focus on the processes. And the problem is you. So have you ever heard of, it's like, you know, desperation, right? Mm-hmm. Like when people are desperate for a listing, oh, I've lost 6 listings in a row. That client was a fuckhead, or this or that, making every excuse. There's a thing like, you can smell it, and it's ugly.
Mm.
Like when you're desperate and when you need a listing and when you make your priorities over the client's priorities, is when it gets worse and worse and worse. And it's not until you realize that the rut is not anyone else, the rut's not the market. Because, mate, if you look at this market, it's changed, right? Why are the best agents still writing phenomenal numbers? Like, I've got people in our organization that sit there, they don't have any business. They're like, oh, the market's fucked. It's like, well, I just had a PB in November. How's the market fucked? Do you know what I mean? It's a decision. It's like, you've got to make a choice. Is it me, or is it the clients? Is it the market? Is it this, or is it that? Stop making excuses and do what you say you're going to do. And what I find fascinating, I went and did a talk for a big law firm in Brisbane, and they're like, what do you think the number one reason why real estate agents don't do well is? For me, it's so simple. It's so
they don't make the calls.
They fail. They fail to call enough people on a daily basis that own property and ask them if they want to sell. The number one reason.
I agree. Yeah.
What the hell?
It's true.
Like, so you're so do you get a listing if you don't call a client? No.
It's true.
Well, why aren't you calling clients? It's the number one thing they know they should be doing and the number one thing that they don't do. And then they blame everything else but them making calls. It's ridiculous. Mm. And it's like, oh, I'm in this rut. Okay, well, you go into, so anyone can get an overpriced, no marketing and lowest commission. Like, you can get that listing, right? But most people that do that, they guarantee the highest price. They give them a really low fee and they do no marketing. Guess what happens? They work for 3 months on it and they don't get paid anyway.
Oh no, goes to the next agent and he's easier to sell.
And they get a better fee because the first agent didn't work because it was like they were a low cost fee.
Yeah.
it's one of those things that you need to follow a process, stick to the plan, run a systemized business. If you don't have an ideal week, if you don't have a structure around what's important to you, what's going to win, like what's going to give you more listings, you're going to fail. Like, there's no point in it. It's like, so I know every single day my time allocation of what I've got. I go into people, look at a listing presentation, right? I allow 2 hours per presentation. Because what happens is, imagine if like all these agents, they're so busy and they start looking at their watch through the presentation. And then the vendor is like, they look at you and as soon as you do that, you're done.
Mm.
So I've got an agent in our office that he can't help himself. It's just a habit. Scrolls on Instagram halfway through a meeting. Mate, you'd be shocked.
Are you serious?
You'd be shocked. Well, how many people do that? So do you know what the solution to that is?
Leave your fucking phone
in the car. Set 2 hours. Like, you start looking at your watch.
Wow.
That you're done. As soon as you do that, you're done. Yeah. So set 2 hours, set more time. Don't be in a rush. Prioritize your time. I just think, people will have, like, there's different phases. Children's a big one, right? Like, I've got 4 children.
Fuck.
I've got 4.
Four.
You know, like, I was at the office the other night, I've got to go, I've got kids. I was like, yeah, I've got 4. What do you mean? Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So you've got, and if you want to go to that next level, you need to prioritize your time. Mm. And to be honest with you, it's like, it's getting easier now as time has gone on. That's through breakthrough. But once you make a decision to go, well, I call it GoPro. Sacrifice.
That was my next question. How do you actually manage kids, health, fitness, as well as being a selling and managing principal?
Yep. So, I sort of look at it a lot. I think it's really busy. Well, one, in business side, I've got amazing business partners across the group. But Hazley and I, we're 50-50 in everything we do. He does a lot of the back end stuff. I look after a certain part of the business. So the elite performers, chairman elite performers, he looks after associates and administration side. He does a lot of the one-on-ones. I lead, so the way we explain it, he's the coach on the sidelines, the captain on the field. And it's, so I bring them all with me, either come or you don't, and it's, and that's worked really well. So on the business side, we're doing it. I think we do it pretty well. We've got 160 staff now across the group, which is growing. I took out number one international Ray White this year, which is pretty good.
Let's go.
Which is good. It was a big. It was a huge. Long time coming. We've been going pretty hard at gunning for that. Family stuff. It can be challenging still. Managing, busy household, 4 kids. I've got a really amazing wife she's a weapon. She knows what to do. We've got a bit of help as well, which is great. But I still do the school drop-offs every single morning. I still get to all the school things, like all the awards and all of those sorts of things. Hard thing I've got coming for me, though, will be school sport on a Saturday.
Good luck.
Well, you've got to just navigate your way around it. I'll make it happen. Like, I'm not gonna miss it.
Yeah.
So I'll just make it work as it comes and adapt and do whatever I need to do to make that happen. I won't be missing school support, though. That's number one. But it's as you get older, it's funny though. As you're getting older and as I'm getting better at what I'm doing, I'm loving it even more. And it's and I'm just finding I can be a bit more flexible. But flexible to me isn't like I'm at home. When I'm at home, my phone's glued to my ear. Like, it's like literally, it's I'm on all of the time. And when I work, I work. When I'm off, I'm off. Yeah. And that's the big thing. So this year I've worked really hard through the last, you know, we had a PB November, my team for the month, which was epic. And that was all planned. So we planned the whole thing. I was going to work up until this date and then that's it. And then now on holidays, which is amazing. Brilliant. And then, you know, they won't see me until the 15th of January. But the coolest thing is we've got 14 listings ready to go for January.
Yeah.
Ready so it's rock. All signed up, ready to go. So all the work's been done. I can stress free.
Yeah, you know.
Have a PB in November, have December, half of January off, and then no stress.
Wow.
No stress. And it feels great. And it's like I've just now I'm here with the kids. I've got wife, got our family coming down. We've got all the lunches booked and just can surf every day, can train, do my saunas, ice baths every day.
Oh, so stop
it's,
it.
It's good. Life's really, really good. It's good when you actually plan everything.
Yeah.
It's like most people don't plan, you know, and that's where the stress comes in. And it's like this year was the first year I actually feel complete. Like I've had the best year, best start to a financial year, best finish to a calendar year, best start. I'll have the best holiday and then the best start to a new year. So I feel really, really centered and feel really grateful. I've got a great team as well.
That's awesome.
Works with me.
That's awesome.
Mate, my last question for you, what would be, like, let's say someone's transitioning from being an associate agent to being a standalone agent, what would be your best piece of advice for someone in that position?
Don't do it too soon. Learn as much as you possibly can. I've got a great young guy who works in my team, Ben Osborne, at the moment. He will be the next thing. And he said something extremely profound to me the other day. I did a performance meeting with him. He's 21 years old. He's like a gun, and I said, so what do you think you need to do? Like, what if you want to be the best, what do you need to do? And he said to me, be patient and be ready to jump when you tell me to jump. And I was like, that's the first I've heard that. Most people go the other way. Oh, I'm going to knock you off next year. And, you know, like we go to every awards and I get everyone come up to me and they're pissed and say, oh, I'm going to knock you off this year. And this. And I said, oh, well, let's talk about that. I've got PT tomorrow morning at 5:30. Come and join me at that PT and we'll talk about it. They don't show up. And it's like, and then they don't knock me off. No, they haven't yet. They'll try, but they haven't. I just think don't go too soon. A lot of young people that are really talented will go too early, and then they'll be out of the industry because it's too hard. And because, you know, they don't have the experience. The other thing is they need to learn everything from the ground up. So most of them, they work in a team where there's a PA, and then the associate comes out and they go, oh, I've got a PA now. It's like there's not one job, not in what I do every day in our business. I created all of those systems. So there's not one system, not one job that I'm not prepared to do myself or know how to do myself. I know how to fold a letter. I know how to write a letter. I know how to print it on the printer. I know how to do it. And so if my PA it goes away for a week, I'll say, no, I got this. We'll do it. I know how to build an ad. Most of these people, they don't know how to do it. They just think that, oh, shit, that happens, or I'll get a PA to do that. But when you come out to be your own, good luck affording the PA straight away. Learn every job that you need to know in the industry. Learn it yourself. Like most of them don't even know how to read a contract. They've never read a contract back to front.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I've come across that before.
And just don't be entitled. Just work your ass off and then do the hard yakka and then your time will come. Don't try to be the big dog from day one because you'll be out of the industry straight away.
Legendary.
Yeah, well, man, I've got a last selfish question.
Yeah.
Because I'm really inspired by the Gold Coast and would love to have part of my business settle down here at some stage. What advice would you give to a buyer's agent or even an agent that's looking to change patch to develop?
Well, I always say, you know, if I was to move to any marketplace anywhere in the country, it would take me 6 months.
That's it. To be doing what you do now?
Oh, no, to get moving.
Yeah.
Because I know what my processes are.
Yeah.
And I just stick to my processes of what I do. And I know that if I was to do it the way that I do it and make the calls and meet the people that I need to meet, I'll make that happen. But again, it's a sacrifice. You move markets, you do something, you got to sacrifice something. With a buyer's advocacy, I think that that's easy because you just need to build relationships with agents. agency is agents are the gateway to buyer's agents, right? So if you go and build really strong relationships, get them to refer you people, you're home and hose. That's the number one thing. Like if I was an agent coming down here, the first thing I'd do, say if I was moving to the Gold Coast, first thing I'd do is ring, go and talk to every agent in the office and say, hey, give me all your old inspection lists, anything that I list off, I'll call through them, anything I list off the back and I'll bring you in 50-50. Just get moving straight away. Because a lot of people, if you look at buyers list that buyers, that agents are using, they don't go back 12 months ago and call those buyers lists. There's no chance they're doing that. Imagine, like, or even though at the moment, what I'd be doing, this is a good little tip for anyone that wants some stuff right now, is interest rates have gone up significantly, right? Start calling all the people that bought in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's a good one, man.
So start calling all the people. People go, oh, 5 years, 7 year, buying cycle 7 years. Not when they had sub 2% interest rates, and interest rates have gone up to 6%.
Yeah.
Mate, you ring someone that's been a year in, they got a bit of mortgage stress, and you bring them an offer, they'll sell it.
Yeah.
So start focusing on the people that could be under mortgage stress. So calling all of the people that have been selling that have bought in the last 1, 2, or 3 years and saying, hey, the market shifted, here's this, would you consider a buyer? Imagine your call, and there's an old thing in real estate, they say, convenience trumps loyalty. Oh, I've got a relationship with so-and-so. Oh yeah, okay, cool. What if I brought you this cash offer here of this much money? And they go, oh yeah, that sounds good, but let me call them. I'm selling it through you. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So start, bring it forward, call all the people that might have seen this interest rate stuff going on, and I'm sure you'll get some instant people that will say, if you can get me an offer, yep, we've been thinking about it. 100%.
Legendary. That was phenomenal. I really enjoyed that.